Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week the GGB Podcast features a discussion with Dave Reebuck, the director of the New Jersey Division of Gaming Enforcement, about how the DGE regulated gaming during the pandemic and how it has helped to legitimize sports betting regulation across the board. This week's program is brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance trimming, and player tested across the board. Find out why operators bank on the power of Peak at IGT.com/Peak. Fight on at any cost of a kingdom of love to be won all along. Although our annual visit with Dave Reebuck, the director of New Jersey's Division of Gaming Enforcement, was interrupted last year by the pandemic, we caught up with him in July to talk about how the DGE has operated since the legalization of sports betting in 2018 and how it has navigated the pandemic. Reebuck talks about how the agency drew up the sports betting regulations, becoming the first state outside of Nevada to offer sports betting to its residents. He also explains what the DGE's responsibilities were during the lockdown and how the casinos responded. He spoke with me in July via Zoom. Let's start with the pandemic. Obviously, this is the thing that prevented us from getting together last year. It hit early and hard here in Atlantic City. Casinos closed within hours of the order being given. In Vegas, casinos had never closed before, but in New Jersey, they had closed, for other crazy reasons like budget crises and things like that. So was that kind of an advantage that you knew how to close down casinos at a moment's notice?
Yeah, I mean, again, the industry here was prepared for it. As you mentioned, prior to my tenure here, the casinos had to close for budget reasons. They had the Hurricane Gloria in 1985 that they had to adapt to. But I've had experience in my tenure here to have to close the casinos twice.
Right.
Once was for a very short period of time in August 2011 due to what was then called Hurricane Irene.
Right.
It was only a very short period of 24 hours that we were closed and had to evacuate the island. The second was a little more significant, as we remember Superstorm Sandy from October 2012, where the casinos were actually shut down for 5 days. Fortunately for the properties in Atlantic City, the devastation caused by Superstorm Sandy throughout the state really didn't impact Atlantic City or certainly the casinos themselves.
Right.
However, the return to operations because of the infrastructure that was impacted throughout the rest of the state with electricity and computer systems was it just took a while. But yes, we're very used to anticipating and a closing and going through the procedures needed to shut down the property in an orderly way to protect the employees and to safeguard the consumers and make sure that we ride out, in our case, the storms.
Right.
And in this case, as we know, it went on for a lot longer than 5 days and went on for almost in excess of 3 months.
Right. Yep. So once the casinos actually closed, how long did it take the regulators to understand how to move forward and what responsibility everybody had at that point?
Yeah. Well, this was a little different, as you know, because of the pandemic and the it wasn't as a natural catastrophe where it passes and you're have an orderly reopening of the property without any additional restrictions or controls. So the actual process of how to open, to bring back employees, to bring back customers is well set.
Right.
I mean, we have state troopers embedded into the properties when they're closed. We have investigators embedded into the properties when they're closed. The operators have their employees and maintenance staff embedded, and with the expectation is that we're going to open just the way we always did once we get the signal that we can reopen because of a national incident.
Right.
In this case, as we all know, is a lot different. And as the hardships caused by the COVID virus were impacting society and impacting people, it allowed the industry and the Department of Health, the governor's office, ROI agency, attorney general's office to begin almost immediately to plan how would we reopen, knowing that the COVID virus isn't going to go away.
Right.
And a way that you protect your employees and you protect your consumers and what restrictions would have to be built in. So the planning with the advice of the medical community, as well as the Department of Health and their experts, began almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And depending on the day and depending on what we were learning about COVID and how it was transmitted and how you would protect yourself, it was changing rapidly. And after about 3 months in of evaluation, there began, if you remember, on the first stage of COVID, it began to have a downturn. We didn't have any vaccinations.
Right, sure.
And there was a sense that society and commercial establishments could begin the process of reopening. And the governor, with the advice of the Department of Health, allowed for the casinos to reopen in July of 2020, over the July 4th weekend, with a 25% capacity and limited services available, very limited services available beyond the gaming floor. And the plans that each casino developed and were approved by not only me, but also by the Department of Health and the governor's office on how to safely reopen were adopted, published, and educated so that the general public understood, the unions understood, their employees understood. And it was a very thorough process, a lot of input from a lot of parties. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, it worked pretty well. It worked pretty well. Yep. And when I say it worked pretty well, you were looking at, okay, who was getting sick, who was contracting the COVID while they were at the property working and when they were open. Mm-hmm. And as we were tracking those numbers, it was a lot less than what was being seen in the general population. So right. I'm very pleased at what the casinos did. I think they were really dedicated to this. And, the essentially 90 days or more of planning worked for us. And in our case in New Jersey, once the casinos were permitted to open, they never closed again.
Right, right.
There were additional restrictions, then the second phase kicked in, but over time, they never closed.
Right, right.
They never closed. And now they're obviously where we are today, they're virtually fully reopened.
Right.
With essentially minimal restrictions.
Yeah, I don't remember reading about a lot of violations of the capacity limits or mask mandates or that at all, And then I think the most difficult part for the casinos was the dining. I mean, they all set up these outdoor dining. Some set them up in the parking garage and stuff. What kind of oversight did you have over those kind of things?
Well, as you know, this is the most highly regulated industry probably in the state.
Right.
And this industry knows it, and the industry understood that they were given an opportunity by the governor, mm-hmm. through his executive orders, to take a risk of reopening. And they knew that if they were not going to self-enforce and take their responsibilities seriously as outlined in the plans, that opportunity that they were presented with would quickly be taken away.
Right.
So I was very encouraged by their aggressive approach to enforce. I had state troopers in the building. I had investigators in the building virtually every day, observing, watching. They knew it. And no commercial establishment in the state of New Jersey had the day-to-day oversight by the governmental agencies that we had, mm-hmm. in the casinos.
Right.
And the combination of both, their commitment and their understanding that we were going to observe, worked very well for us in the long term. Were there violations? Yeah, there were violations. Mm-hmm. But human nature being what it is, they were small scale violations, dealt with immediately. We had no significant fines. There were no I did not view any intentional violations. I think the education that went on by the operators with their employees was good. And generally where we saw violations occur, it was because individual employees were not as diligent in performing their duties as one would have hoped. And that was dealt with immediately by the industry and their supervisors when it was brought to their attention. So, yeah, it was not easy, but it had to be done. And I guess the most important thing I learned is that there probably wasn't a single piece of plexiglass that anybody could buy in the state of New Jersey in the tri-state area after we implemented our plans. That's so true. The shields, the masks, the plexiglass, they're all built into the gaming floor, and we've seen it throughout the country what people did.
Right.
It helped.
Yeah.
It definitely helped.
Yeah.
And I think it created an environment that was a strange environment when you walked through the properties. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you didn't have the full scale food and beverage. You didn't have all the other amenities that are very popular for people. But you know, the consumers adapted and so did the industry. But I'm glad we're through that process.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no question. So now that you know, there isn't any limits on you, we're fully reopened, is it back to business as usual for the DGE?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it is. It is back to, the defining moment for, I think, coming back to normal was when the CDC announced after the vaccinations started to be rolled out very aggressively that those who are vaccinated did not need to social distance. Those who are vaccinated did not need to wear a mask. And those who are not vaccinated were on the honor code system. And that came from the federal government. I think that took a lot of us by surprise in May when that announcement hit. We knew we were headed in that direction.
Right.
Our numbers of vaccinations in this state were outstanding. Mm-hmm. But when the CDC announced that, that threw a gauntlet down that allowed others then to understand that, wait a second, this full-scale reopening is going to have to be accelerated because now you have the federal government is essentially giving directions here that we weren't prepared for. I mean, we weren't prepared for that.
Right.
And then our state and the Department of Health and the governor's office, who was an emergency management who was monitoring this, moved very quickly to the point in time where the restrictions started dropping almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And by the time you got into late June, I mean, we were almost back to normal. And now, there are no capacity limits. There's no masking limits. There's no social distancing limits. All the food and beverage establishments are open like they usually have prior to COVID. We still have some reporting mechanisms in place that are maybe seen as being onerous, but we're tracking COVID still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. We're also allowing people who want to wear masks to wear them. And the industry has made that available to their employees. And so there's no consequences to anybody who wants to take extra precautions, whether they're vaccinated or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we ensure that the industry is diligent in working with their employees to have them understand what their options are to work in an environment if they don't feel that they are secure, mm-hmm. what can be done to allow them to protect their personal health.
Okay. So. Great.
The Peak family of top-performing cabinets by IGT are accumulation of years of research and development, a passion leveraging both internal expertise and customer feedback. The results are a series of astounding cabinets that command attention with sleek modern features, ergonomically perfected curves, and bold design. Every aspect of the Peak cabinets have been scrutinized to ensure a comfortable gaming experience resulting in exceptional performance you can bank on. Learn more at igt.com/peak. And now back to our podcast.
So we really haven't talked since sports betting was legalized. You know, you obviously anticipated that happening, as it didn't take you long to promulgate the rules and regulations surrounding sports betting. So how did you put those rules together? Did you go to other jurisdictions and see how they
added that kind of thing? Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to this before, Roger, and when the state of New Jersey took on this challenge of overturning PASPA and essentially started in 2011-12 and heated up into 13 and beyond, we actually drafted under the first sports wagering law regulations to effectuate sports wagering in New Jersey. And of course, we got an injunction dropped on us by the federal government and by the sports leagues essentially almost a day before they were going to take effect.
Yeah.
So as the case wound its way through, we realized that we need to take a much deeper dive into understanding how sports wagering works. Mm-hmm. And when I look back on the original proposed regulations or adopted regulations, I was not comfortable that we were ready for the modern era of sports wagering as what was anticipated by the state of New Jersey and the people we were working with. Mm-hmm. And so we obviously looked very heavily to Nevada.
Right.
And then we realized that we needed to go overseas and understand how sports wagering was run in countries like England, UK, Ireland, other jurisdictions, foreign country jurisdictions that were seen as leaders in sports wagering. We talked to Australia, had teams of people go into Europe to not only learn from regulators, but learn from operators. And it became very obvious to us that we were not as robust in our regulations on the online side of the house as we probably needed to be back in, you know, when we first drafted our regulations. And our business belief in dealing on what would be popular in New Jersey because of casinos being limited only to Atlantic City and the racetracks being piecemealed in areas was that if we relied on a model that drove the population into the casinos and racetracks, very similar to the model that existed in Nevada, that we wouldn't be as successful as if we opened it up to statewide online, a very robust statewide online operation.
Right.
And we talked to Nevada about this, but Nevada's model was seeing sports wagering as an amenity that benefits the casino operators, that drives people in. And it was a good program for Nevada, but we recognized it's one we did not want to duplicate because we believed that sports wagering was going in a different direction as a business model for the country.
Right.
And it would be the model that Nevada adapted. And when we looked at the infrastructure and technology associated with sports wagering in the United States at that time, it was a night and day comparison to what existed in Europe, the technology, the infrastructure, the speed to what existed in Nevada.
Right, right.
And we did not want to copy the technology that was, that I viewed, and I'm not a technology guy, as you well know,
right.
But it was pretty obvious to me when I saw the back of the house and what existed in the Nevada casinos that that's not ready to go interstate.
Right.
I mean, it's old, it's antiquated, it may work.
Right.
But you're talking about an explosion in possible growth, and as we all know with technology, if you don't have the best and brightest infrastructure to support the work you're doing, something's going to break.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's not good. So, so we changed our regs. We drafted them, and we had a set model of regulations in place for emergent use under the Christie administration if we had won the case and PASPA to have been overturned. The PASPA case, as you know, was not even argued before the Supreme Court until December of 2017.
Right.
We move into, you know, move into 18. We have a new governor. Then we got to go back and review all those regulations with the new administration. They were very comfortable with them. And the game plan all along was, we win this case, New Jersey has to have a new law on sports wagering, because, as you know, our argument, we essentially decriminalized sports wagering
right.
to win before. So we have to have a new law. The legislature has passed a new law. But when that law is passed, we have a set of regulations already adopted. We'll adapt them to the laws that's being drafted by the legislature. And the day that law is passed, we're ready to go.
Right.
And with emergency regulations. Mm-hmm. And law was passed by the legislature, signed by Governor Murphy on June 11th. First bets were taken June 14th at Borgata and Monmouth Racetrack.
Right.
And we had 30 days to get ready for internet under that law. I didn't need it, but the industry needed that 30 days right. to get ready. And lo and behold, we had a couple operators come in and hit the ground running on August 1st.
Yeah.
And so then the rollout happened beyond. But, I mean, I had a lot of kudos to my staff who worked tirelessly to have these regulations in place to allow for sports wagering, both retail and online, virtually immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a surprise to the industry. As you know, right. I was in – when we were meeting with companies in Europe and who wanted to come to the United States, it made it very clear to them three things. You better get a good lobbyist, because the law's going to change. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you guys want to see in the United States, but the law's changing in New Jersey. Two, you better get the best attorney you can that represents gaming companies in New Jersey, because you guys here in England and Europe, Slovenia, I'm telling you right now, I'm not copying everything you do, and you better learn how to do business in the state of New Jersey and the United States, because we're not going to flip the switch and make things happen
right.
the way that you're doing them here. Because quite honestly, it's just not going to flow. We can't accept the way you're doing business here. You have a great product, but you got to learn how we do things in the United States.
Right.
But the third thing is, you better be ready to go immediately. So you better find yourself a good partner, because the casinos and the racetracks in New Jersey control sports wagering. You can't get a partnership with those guys,
mm-hmm.
you're not getting into New Jersey as a business operator.
Right, right.
And then last thing was, you better be prepared to go quickly when your product is in, because you need to get your product in the lab and approved by us, because if it's not approved, you're not going to be going live anytime soon.
Right.
So
right.
all of them knew this in advance of the law being passed and signed by the governor. And those that were the most aggressive, I think, reaped the benefits of doing very well.
Sure, no question.
Yeah.
So you did license these entities pretty quickly. Certainly, the U.S.-based DFS companies like DraftKings and FanDuel, and then you, even the Cambies and the European countries of the world. I mean, you know, you got them up and running pretty quickly as well. I mean, that was a pretty amazing feat there.
Did you have to teach them? Gaming, and you know, sports wagering right. and gambling. The benefit we had is we had online gambling licensed and approved companies for casino gambling
right.
since 2013.
Right.
So there were many operators who wanted to expand from iGaming into sports wagering,
right.
and it was seamless for them.
Yeah.
So we had years under our bed of knowing a lot of companies, not
sure.
all, but
right.
a lot of companies who couldn't do both.
Right.
And the biggest surprise I keep telling people who are new to this is there are hundreds of companies involved in sports wagering, either B2B, B2C, vendors that are needed to provide the product that either the lottery is going to run if you're a state lottery way, or a commercial casino or a tribal casino, that you need to know. They have an expertise in so many areas that you need to know that you got to deal with those companies.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not just the forward facing brand name like FanDuel, for example, or
right.
DraftKings. You look at that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Sure, right.
And all their partnerships and all their vendors and all their companies they interact with to provide their product,
right,
the B2C product, just know that you got to regulate them too.
Sure, right.
For suitability. Yeah. And you're also going to have to look at their product to make sure that they're not doing anything that you're not finding acceptable under other operational needs that you have to ensure protects consumers and, you know, does and prevents fraud, AML, all those good things, responsible gaming. You just start adding up all those responsibilities and recognize you're dealing with a lot of companies.
Right, right, exactly.
And I think now, after 3 years, Roger, for states coming in now, there is a relatively mature market of companies that you can rely on if they want to come into your jurisdiction that know what is expected in the United States, maybe not in your exact jurisdiction, but probably 90%, 95% of what that new jurisdiction is going to adopt is similar to every other jurisdiction in the United States.
Sure.
What they want and need to have integrity and fraud prevention and consumer protection and all those good things.
Right. And a lot of them have been vetted by New Jersey and some of the other states as well to begin with.
Oh, yeah. So, other states have joined in. Actually, the other states have done things better than we have. And you know me, as soon as I learned of that, I'm copying it and taking it and putting it in New Jersey.
Sure.
You know? Listen, I think we have a great staff, but I'd be naive to think that other people can't think and do things better than we do. And I'm going to copy that and take that in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Well, if it helps us for integrity and suitability.
I like that attitude because in Nevada, they keep talking about the gold standard.
I think we're great,
you know?
But listen, I'm not that arrogant to think that we're the best in everything we do. And I push my staff constantly. If they're doing it better, find out why.
Sure, right.
Because
I
want to do it as well as they're doing it.
So a lot of states have come to you, though, to get your advice. Tell us how you react to other states when they reach out to the DGE to get their input on how New Jersey handles it.
Yeah, we're in it together.
Yeah.
Listen, anybody who doesn't think we're in this together is very naive. Because if there's a meltdown or a problem in one jurisdiction because of an error that's made, or a mistake that's made by them, it's going to have consequences for all of us.
Right, yeah.
We're in a federalist system.
Yeah.
And there are, unfortunately, people or agencies that do not want us to be successful in this new form of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no doubt in my mind that if we did not do it well as states, and we solved problems with consumer protection, we saw problems with AML, we saw problems with responsible gambling,
right,
we saw people harmed, that you're going to see a situation very similar to what we see in UK right now, where the political elements come into play and begin to challenge everything that the state regulators are supposed to be doing.
Right.
Yeah. And now you're in a whole new situation where you're having force-fed changes to adopt new mechanisms to protect the vulnerable, to protect those who need help, and to ensure that you're doing your job as a regulator.
Right.
So I have no problem in sharing any secret, any process, any procedure we do. And I encourage the other jurisdictions, I tell them, you can take this and adopt it. And I will tell you right now, you'll be in great shape. If you think you can do it better, God bless you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will watch what you do. And if you are doing it better, I'm going to copy what you do.
Right.
So we're in this together. And I think most of the regulators, and I give a lot of credit sometimes to UNLV, they have a great program of pulling regulators together and sharing information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do.
Yeah.
So when you go to conferences or you're talking to others and you're getting together, you're just not out there for a little social engagement. It's like you want to learn from them and build a better mousetrap if you can.
Right, right.
And not make a mistake that would have catastrophic ramifications where others would have to intervene and challenge your judgment as it relates to how you're performing your duties.
Sure.
And so far, I think we've done a pretty good job with the states all working together to achieve those goals. And you know, so we haven't had a lot of meltdowns and breakdowns. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to the other states for really working hard to
sure, right,
achieve the same goals we all want to have here.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, during the pandemic, online gaming soared, you know, it was just, you know, became the one place you could gamble when the casinos were closed. Did that put more pressure on the DGE to keep up with the technology and the action that was going on online side?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's technology changing so constantly. Mm-hmm. The true benefit I have here, and most states don't, but I have a lab,
right?
Technicians, over 50 people, mm-hmm. who essentially are assigned to reviewing cybersecurity issues, AML issues as a technology, not just the operations, right. But I mean, we're monitoring and overseeing the technology side of the house. And as technology changes, we have to adapt quickly.
Right.
And technology, it's tough to stay on top of. And it's probably the biggest challenge that I think the state regulators have to encounter, because most, as you know, most state regulators don't have their own lab. They right. have people who are experienced, they right. have IT experts, but they're not into the weeds the way we are on a day-to-day basis with having so many people assigned to the duties they're assigned to. And therefore, it's incumbent upon those agencies to partner with the private sector to fill the gap.
Sure.
And there's a lot of good private companies out there that right. can assist. Mm-hmm. And also, you have to throw a lot of burden onto the industry by forcing them to do things, which we have by regulation, to have annual audits, to have updates. We have constant meetings on changing and adapting to new challenges with the industry, both on the sports side and the iGaming side. So yeah, it's, you know, let's face it, it's a billion in New Jersey right now. It's over $1 billion annually in gross gaming revenue for mm-hmm. just iGaming online.
Right, right.
And, you know, sports is all, the revenue from sports is not as much, but it's still the handle when you look at sure, how right. much is wagered. Mm-hmm. Each one of those bets, I mean, that's billions of dollars that are wagered on an annual basis.
Right.
And, you know, that's the majority of that in our state is online.
Yeah, absolutely. So last time we talked, your definition of skins included the different platforms that the operators used. Is this still an active definition? And have any of the operators kind of reached the limit of the skins that they can offer?
Yeah, it's still the same definition. Yeah. There's some that are tapped out now. You know, that was another learning lesson from Europe. When we first heard this from Europe, what's a skin? I was right. like, what are they talking about? And so we adopted European definition of a skin. And in the iGaming world, it is not set by statute, the number of skins. It is set by essentially a dialogue that was had with the Casino Association in New Jersey and okay. the regulators. Mm-hmm. Back and forth, education. What's a skin? Why would we do this? You know, I want unlimited skins. I want one skin. I mean, so herding cats is what they say with the casinos when Kevin didn't agree on any substantive defined process. But at that time, we ultimately came to a decision that we would impose 5 skin maximum on iGaming.
Right.
Per casino. Mm-hmm. Now, again, it's iGaming is not in the racetracks. It's just in the casinos.
Right.
I think we may have one casino that's maxed at 5 now.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Or will be shortly, because it may not be operational. But we still have, that's a lot of skins.
Yeah.
Okay. On the sports side of the house, a little different. It's set by statute, 3 okay. max. For a casino, as well as the racetracks.
Okay.
So there are definitely casinos and racetracks that are maxed out now.
Okay.
And the interesting discussion we're having now with the casinos, and it will require a legislative change, is what happens when you have esports? Esports, as you know, is a sports wagering in New Jersey.
Right.
Is it added into the skin, or do we have a separate skin for the esports platform? That has to play itself out. That's still in its infancy stages. But I do see a lot of dialogue continuing on the esports side of the house. I mean, New Jersey, we're very active in wanting to get esports up and running as a gaming function to benefit the industry, as well as to the racetracks.
Right.
And there's a lot of interest from the governor's office in support of esports as an industry in this state. We've had some nice headway in this area with some of the things that we're doing with our EDA, Economic Development Authority, working with them. But yeah, I do think that the challenge with esports will be, how is it going to be played out with the industry in the future? Because it's going to have, you know, it's going to be online. You know, it could be a retail presentation that you have in a casino or in a racetrack, but I think that most everybody sees it as being a more expansive operation online than it would be in a performance or presentation in a retail environment.
Well, you can just see the growth of that Twitch website.
You saw the article. Yeah. You know, Twitch is out there now. Right. You know, this is a great market for them, and you know, they're not the only ones.
No.
So. Right. Clearly a gray market area for the U.S. to deal with, not just in gaming, not by gaming regulators, but if anyone thinks that people are not wagering on esports today through the online platforms that are being offered and not regulated, needs to wake up. Okay.
And then
that's another interesting dialogue that we'll have to have public policy people. You want to have a gray market? You want to have a regulated market?
Right.
Kind of reminds me of the old debate we had, you know, Roger, on fantasy sports.
Right, exactly.
Gambling,
right.
Not gambling. Gray market, black market, white market.
Right.
Well, and you're going to see the same thing with esports in the future.
In esports, you have those loot boxes too, which are a whole mystery to me. I have no idea how they work, but it sounds like it could be really problematic for regulators.
Well, again, these are. These are all these challenges of gaming. As gaming expands in the internet, there's a lot of opportunity here for people to earn money,
right,
to take advantage of it. And is it going to be regulated as gambling or not?
Right.
Good question. It's going to play itself out. Obviously, regulators and who are overseeing gambling today are at the forefront of trying to be in the position of educating themselves on what are the options for the public policy operators who want, what do you want to do?
Sure.
Because it's not a gaming regulator that's going to make the final decision. It's going to be a decision that's made by legislators, their governor, or even the federal government.
So are you encouraged by it seems to be a very competitive market now? I think just last month, I think the Borgata /MGM overtook Golden Nugget for the online gaming revenue lead. And I know Caesars has big plans now that their new ownership is in place there. It seems to be a lot more competitive than it had been, you know, just a few years ago.
Yeah, and it gets back to what I said. Certain properties were very prepared from day one to go.
Right.
And they reaped the benefits of that and became very successful. Others were a little slower to implement their business plans. In the last 3 years, it's an extremely competitive market here right now. And we wanted it to be that way. It benefits the consumers. There will be mergers and acquisitions. I'm not worried about companies who don't make it. They'll be subsumed by others. This marketplace is on fire right now with regards to what's working and who's good and who's not as good. And the consumer clearly benefits with the choices that are available to him or her. And I think the industry is evolving. You know, you've seen it. Roger. I mean, Caesars acquired William Hill.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Nevada model in the past, mm-hmm. Caesars never acquired William Hill.
No.
It's just an amenity.
Right.
You pay.
Yep.
They take all the risk. They give you a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. Caesars acquired William Hill. Bally's acquired BetWorks.
Right. BetWorks. Right. Yep.
Wynn acquired BetBull, another mm-hmm. sports wagering. So instead of partnering, they're now bringing these in, running it themselves, or taking more of the risk themselves by having it as a subsidiary, also taking the opportunity to have more benefit by making more money. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. Gamesys, you know, again, that's sure. my gaming yep. company. Bally's going to acquire them mm-hmm. soon. I mean, they haven't yet, but...
Right, it's on the way.
It's on the way. Yep. So will there be other transactions, not just by casinos and racetracks, to expand their operations, to not have it outsourced as much in partnerships, but to bring it in-house? I do believe that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So MGM tried to acquire Entain.
Right.
Didn't go through, but they have a joint venture with them right now. Mm-hmm. They're their partner, but they tried to acquire them.
Right.
Yeah. You know, what's Sands going to do? You know,
right. That's the big question.
I mean,
question,
we just
right?
saw that, at, you know, Sheldon was, Adelson was historically the biggest opponent to
sure.
online gambling. He said he was online sports wagering, but we all knew he ran online sports wagering.
Right.
But now, what are they going to do with all their cash? Are they going to enter this field? Are they going to, you know, is it, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
I think
to, on their conference call.
And,
on their conference call the
Listen,
other day, Rob Goldstein said they were getting into that business. So
yeah.
you know, Rob knows what's going
on. I'm sure
on
Sheldon's rolling over in his grave. But, you know, I'm happy that they've seen the light and they've joined the good guys in moving forward with the future for gaming.
That's great. That's great. Well, Dave, just one more question here. You know, you've been leading the DG now for 12 years. I think that's a record for a
Not
director.
Not that long.
Almost,
but
I think the impressive thing is you've worked with both Republicans and Democrats during that time. So you know, are you going to stick around for a little bit longer? Or are you going to go take the money from the consulting companies that want to pay all this money?
who knows what the future brings? I'm still a little kid at heart, trying to make a decision what I want to do with my life. And at the end of the day, the person who has the most determination on what I'm doing in the future is my wife, and she
right.
hasn't told me I can even retire yet. So, you know, you know how that is. We'll take one day at a time, but I've been very fortunate. Had wonderful support from Governor Murphy as well as Governor Christie. The legislature has done a great job in allowing us to have a game plan to draw off of to be successful in the state of New Jersey. And it's a, you know, when you're the leader of the orchestra here, which is all I am, and others are supporting you and giving you all the resources you need to be successful as a regulator, it's hard to lead. Okay. And there's always challenges out there, and I look forward to dealing with the next challenges. And as long as they want me to stay around, I'll stay around.
Great.
But those decisions, as you well know, are out of your control.
Yes.
And, you know, just do the best you can every day you come to work. And,
right.
You know, we'll see what the future holds. But, you know, at this point in time, I don't have any plans
right.
other than let's get it right here in New Jersey
right.
and be the best at what we do and lead this country in this area.
I know you have a great staff there. We're currently
getting
relicensed for our affiliate marketing site, and the investigator there has been nothing but professional. And you know, I know the rest of your staff is the same way. So, you know, congratulations on all your time there and leading the industry through some really crucial times. And I think you've done a great job. And I think when you leave, they're going to make that desk. They're going to put a plaque on that desk, the Dave Rebuck desk.
Nah, that's not good. That far, I
got you.
You know, so thank you, Roger.
Okay. Well, thanks for the time, Dave.
And thank you. And again, look forward to seeing you, hopefully in person. Really looking forward to getting out and hopefully being in G2E in October and getting to see a lot of people in person that I haven't seen in 18 months.
Yeah, that'll be nice to do for sure.
So I think we'll see you there. And
we'll definitely see you there.
If I don't see you beforehand. Okay. You take care, and thanks again for having me.
We'll let the night come and do what it may. Together we'll find the courage. We'll find faith. Hope you enjoyed this week's GGB podcast, with special thanks to IGT and its Peak family of cabinets, performance-driven and player-tested across the board. Find out why the operators bank on the power of the Peak at igt.com/peak. To learn more about how New Jersey regulates casinos, sports betting, and iGaming, visit ggbmagazine.com. For all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the recovery from the pandemic, delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. And don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.